Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias! Hey, man.
Hello. One week of hoop so far. More games left. Only a few games left in the regular season, which seems surreal at this point. We're what, a week and a half, 2 weeks away from play-in time?
It's insanity because, A, you're right. There's only so many days left in the season. I keep seeing things where it's like, oh, they only have 8-9 games left. I'm like, how do they only have 8-9 games left? And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is that time of year. Teams are scrambling. Positioning is fun. And the Western Conference is a mess.
Western Conference is a mess indeed. We talked about the East play-in teams earlier in the week. We're going to talk about the West play-in teams today. And to emphasize Steve's point, I've had to shuffle around the West play-in teams on the Google Doc multiple times since Monday night just because everyone is so jumbled together. So we're going to go 7 through 10. Then we're going to talk about teams on the outside. We'll close with, I guess, a couple of Warriors questions since they are actually winning road games now. That seems cool, seems important. You might want to be able to do those if you have deep playoff aspirations. We'll start with some news notes first, though, before we get into any actual basketball talk. A quick rest in peace to Knicks legend Willis Reed, Hall of Famer, a champion, an MVP, a Rookie of the Year, multi-time All-Star, multi-All-NBA teams. Throughout his historic career, made the NBA anniversary team for, I want to say, 50-year anniversary team and the 75-year anniversary team. Condolences to his family and to the Knicks fan base and to anyone who was impacted by anything that Willis Reed did. So I want to start with that. I guess we can flow to some injury news from here. Paul George, as we talk about the jumbled nature of the Western Conference, the Los Angeles Clippers will likely be without Paul George for the rest of the regular season, at least, suffering a leg injury. He will be reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks. That does not mean his year in general is done with. So light at the end of the tunnel there, depending on what the Clippers are able to do. If they're able to stay out of the play-in, that gives them a little bit more time. But Steve, like, how big of a blow is this for the Clippers?
That's a big one. The number one thing is when that happened, it looked bad. It looked pretty scary. And when you consider Paul George's history with injuries, it was like, man, come on, let's not do this. Especially when you consider this is a team that has been trying to navigate this season. So at this point of the season, they can elevate. They can go in with some rhythm. And to kind of build up, kind of get a rhythm a little bit, and now Paul George is out down the stretch, it makes it interesting. We still don't know what the totality is. We don't know who the whole is. The other portion of it for the Clippers is the Western Conference is still packed. They are only a half game ahead of Golden State right now for 6. They are only a game and a half ahead of Minnesota for 7. So time is ticking, but you don't want to be in a scenario where, hey, we've been in this 5th and now we're back in the play-in. So you want Paul George to get healthy. You need to get a rhythm. You want to make sure your lineups and your combinations are good to go. But it's going to be a tough stretch. I mean, if you look at their schedule, Oklahoma City again, New Orleans, Chicago, 2 games at Memphis, at New Orleans, against the Lakers versus Portland, at Phoenix. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and ending the regular season with a road game against Phoenix could definitely have some playoff implications. I think beyond that, and you're 100% right, beyond it just stinks for Paul George. Like you touched on a little bit earlier, just the injury history that he's had. Like, we were hosting a watch party during that game when that injury happened. It's just like, yo, like, you don't want to see anybody go down, but you don't want to see Paul George go down. You don't want to see him go down like holding the leg and not being able to put weight on it as he goes to the locker room. It's like, no, we don't want that. And Paul George has been really good this season on top of that. And to your larger point about the Clippers trying to find continuity, like, it really feels like, it really felt like the combination with him and Paul, him and Kawhi Leonard on the floor together, like, it was finally starting to pop. Like, early in the year, we just could not get consistent time with both of those guys on the court together. And then when they were able to do so, and like, they were winning those minutes, but they weren't bulldozing people in those minutes the way that you would hope that they would. And like, that was finally starting to happen. That the Clippers with those two on the floor were beginning to look like world beaters. And now you have this step back again. I wonder how much pressure that shifts back to Kawhi. What does that mean for Russell Westbrook? He's going to have to assume more responsibility. Like, what does that look like? What does that do for the lineups? But ultimately, just hope Paul George is okay and hope he's able to make a return either last week of the season, if the recovery goes better than expected, or at least for the playoffs that the Clippers are able to hold serve. We'll cap it with some brief positive news. Nick Richards, backup center for the Charlotte Hornets, getting a 3-year, $15 million extension. He has emerged as Charlotte's primary backup big, averaging career highs in minutes, points, rebounds, and blocks, averaging 9-9 with 2 blocks in his starts this season. Just want to give Nick Richards some love. It's been a quality campaign for him. The Hornets playing some competent basketball very quietly. Again, not gonna matter much in terms of the standings. Like, we know where they're gonna land, somewhere high in the lottery, but it's been turning up post All-Star break, and he's been a figurative and literal big portion of that. So congrats to him on the deal. Steve, do you have Nick Richards thoughts before we get into the West?
Great energy, fantastic effort, does his job very well. Screen rolls, rebounds, 2 thumbs up.
And that concludes the Nick Richards section of the podcast. We can now move to the Western Conference. We're starting with the current 7th seed as we record on a Thursday afternoon. The Thursday slate of games has not happened yet. So as of now, the Minnesota Timberwolves, 37-37, 7th seed in the West. Game behind Golden State right now, 6-7 since the All-Star break, and they've been pretty middling statistically since then. 18th in offense, 15th in defense. 12th in half-court offense, but 20th in half-court defense, 22nd in transition offense, and 9th in transition defense, which seems to be flipped from where it was at the beginning of the season. Steve, very broad question, but what has caught your eye with the Minnesota Timberwolves since the break?
I've been very intrigued with the Wolves ever since they made that trade. They brought Mike Conley in, and I've liked what they've put together. It feels like multiple players are unlocked and they're moving in the right direction. The record hasn't necessarily reflected it, but Mike Conley's brought a lot to the table for them, doing the little things, opening things up for Rudy Gobert with the empty corner pick and roll, moving the ball, quick tempo. I think his blend with Anthony Edwards works very well because of his ability to make quick decisions, allow Anthony Edwards to have those on-ball reps. He can keep it moving if he gets a skip. He can score, kind of calm everything down. Obviously, Anthony Edwards' play has upticked pre-injury, so we've seen more aggression from him. The increased usage for Jaden McDaniels and his growth offensively has been a massive part of what I've liked about Minnesota post-trade. Just the different ways they've used him to attack, the ball in his hands, the one-on-one play, being a screener, coming off staggers and screens and helping Minnesota with the movement. Steady play from Kyle Anderson, just doing a little bit of everything. Hey, you play with Rudy Gobert and make sure this works. Torian Prince contributing again. Feels like he might be like the new Millsap adjacent, where it's like, oh, it's March. Here comes Torian Prince with some threes. Naz Reid has been steady. Nickeil Alexander-Walker has been fun. And now we have Kat returning. And I am curious how they take all of this and mold it together down the stretch, because, buddy, the one thing I'll say about the Karl-Anthony Towns return, it was the aggression that he had in that game. It did not seem like there was any hesitation from Kat. Didn't feel like he or they were really overthinking it, as opposed to what it looked like at the start of the season when Kat and Gobert were playing together. Felt like we had more aggressive drives from Kat, which I think is going to be important if he's going to be spaced on the perimeter. It was like he sat on the sidelines and was like, oh, I have to be this to get this thing to work the best way. But then you had the moments where it's still like, okay, now where do we go? Because against Atlanta, they ran Horn's chest. So Mike Conley comes off, I believe, Kat at the elbow. Rudy sets a flare for him. And the Atlanta Hawks, who we spent how much time talking about their defense last episode?
Yeah, it wasn't a very positive conversation about their defense.
Right. Those same Hawks casually switched everything. And it was like, oh, okay. That's still a thing. So it's just putting it all together, getting all the pieces to work in unison. But then at the same time, does it matter? If you have the Gobert package and you can get it right, and you have the Kat package that you feel you can get right, you really only need to figure out about, what, 9-10 minutes? Tops. Yep.
And so, those are just, it's just Naz Reid time at that point, I guess.
Yeah. But before you go, actually, I'll table that. I'll let you go first. They'd have some double big decisions to make. That's a tease for my question.
Okay. I mean, honestly, we can get into it if you'd like, because I feel like the answer to the double big question is we're going to do it all the time with everyone healthy. And I wonder how that's going to go.
My bigger question mark, I think Kat and Naz, you can make it work offensively. I think Naz and Kat and Rudy, you can make work offensively. It's just the top two. Can you make it work? What does that do to your lineup versatility come playoff time? Because even in that Atlanta game, we were getting towards the late moments. I was like, okay, they need to stop. Who's the five? Like, which five folks are going to be on the floor? Who's not playing? Mm-hmm. I think one possession was Kat. And I was like, okay, this is going to be interesting. And how do they balance when they decide to go smaller? Because you have Prince and Anderson, so you can make it work if mm-hmm. you need to. But it's which person sits from the wing room, which big sits. It could just get interesting in my eyes.
Yeah, like even towards the end of that game, there's like Torian Prince was out there. They went without Mike Conley to the point where we were like, wait a minute, did he get hurt and we like miss something? Where's Mike Conley? Then he checked in shortly after. I'm like, ah, okay. They actually need a guard to like do things. That would make some sense. And I imagine that also just clears up with Anthony Edwards is back in the lineup, like just seeing how the ankle heals and how that holds up. That's going to be a pretty important subplot to follow moving forward. But like the double big stuff is interesting. I'm glad you hit on the Cat portion early on and just the aggression that he played with. Obviously, his spacing is going to be very important to what Minnesota wants to accomplish. And I think if he does have dual benefit of one, just not shooting, what was it, like 20% on threes in the minutes that he shared with Cat before, I mean, with Rudy before he got hurt. And it's like, okay, there's a shooting slump and then there's that. Like, that's just not Cat. That's going to bounce back at some point. And before it really started to heat back up, he got hurt and he missed multiple months of the season. So we'll see. But like that shooting is going to be very important to open things up. The Conley Gobert pick and roll has predictably been very, very, very good. Just that tandem in general has been good. Some numbers from PVP stats very quickly. A plus 5.2 net rating in 401 minutes with Conley and Rudy Gobert on the floor together. A minus 14.5 net rating in the 72 minutes that Rudy has played without Mike in the games that they both appeared in. And a minus 22.7 net rating in 69 minutes with Mike Conley on the floor without Rudy Gobert. Small sample size for the latter two numbers, obviously. But, like, that's interesting to keep an eye on. Too long, didn't read. Conley and Gobert work. They have been one of the most effective pick-and-roll duos in the NBA since Conley's came over. 1.19 points per possession. That is the third highest mark in the NBA among 164 duos with at least 200 picks behind Steph and Dre and Spencer Dinwiddie and Christian Wood, which... that's funny for a few reasons, but at any rate, that's been good. It's been nice to see Rudy look more comfortable, like very quietly. Like Rudy's just been pretty good post All-Star break. He still very much has loud moments, made louder by Steve laughing at me when he has those moments. But like it has kind of perked up for him post All-Star break. I do want to give him a quick shout for that. What is it, 16 and 11, a couple of blocks. He's doing some positive things. You can give my hat tip for that. Surely. I see. I would be along on the Rudy Gobert Island.
No. You good. I'm just saying I watched the Philly game.
Again, it hasn't always been great. And I think it's fair to say overall, this has very much been a disappointing season for Rudy Gobert. Like no one should argue that portion. But I'm just saying he's had his moments and like it feels like he's perking up a little bit. Now we'll see what the adjustment period is going to be as Cat comes back into the fold fully. The game against Atlanta was the first one. I'm sure the usage is going to change up. And then once Anthony Edwards comes back, and boy, did he seem happy to see Cat back on the floor. Let me tell you. So once Ant gets back in, like again, there's just going to be a reshuffling of the hierarchy. And so that's good. And I think that's what really stinks about the injury too. Like now they only have 8-9 games to try to figure this out before the playoffs / play in wherever they end up landing. That's not a lot of time.
They have 8-9 games to answer a lot of the questions that we sat here and asked on the preseason pod. Now I will say the good part for them is one, they're going in knowing, okay, we kind of know what the bottom of this is. Mm-hmm. And so we can kind of try to work to avoid that. Or we know what we have to work through a little bit more as opposed to this could be this and oh no, wait. So that's a positive. And then the tempo has picked up. The ball movement has picked up. So it may have a little bit better, an easier way to fit that in, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So instead of this is what we bring to the table It's no, we play this way. We play with tempo. We have screens. We're moving the ball. And we can also do this with these guys. I think that may help.
I think that makes sense. A quick question for you, just flip it to the other end of the floor. Like, again, I have been getting the Minnesota Timberwolves jokes. I was high on them. They have been bad, or they've been bad relative to the expectation for me, at the very least. One thing that I was clinging on with Minnesota is like, hey, like, quietly, they've been a good half-court defense all year long, even with some of the missteps, et cetera, et cetera. 20th in half-court defense since the All-Star break. Have you seen has anything in particular popped for you with their defense?
I mean, they just kind of are in between too many times. Mm-hmm. Dribble penetration can give them issues. Screen navigation can give them issues. The drop can give them issues, to where a guy like Trae Young can just come out and say, well, I'm going to floater, three-pointer. I'm here. And now you see guys feeling comfortable in rhythm. Now you have different schemes with Naz Reid. So just they haven't had that collective oomph behind them defensively where it's like, mm-hmm. I know what they're going to do. It's not necessarily just poor, but there's a lot of space that guys are having. There's a lot of freedom that teams are having. And especially in this season, with the way the offenses are humming this year, I don't know how much they are dictating terms. Mm-hmm. I don't really know how much they're anticipating. It feels like a lot of reacting, or person does this and now it's a shot. You know, it's not an effort problem, but it's just... I don't think they put their paws on teams, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get it. Double entendre, don't ask them how. But no, like that makes sense. And like even when watching the Wolves when they had the start and end, like I have sung the praises of Jaden McDaniels defensively all year long. But like at the point of attack, it does kind of feel like that's it a lot of the time, especially in this stretch without Ant. And like Ant, when he ramps up the effort, it's cool. When he doesn't, it's a bit of a problem. And once you add in the inconsistent nature of just the point of attack defense with what they're trying to do scheme wise with the bigs, the Rudy drop not hitting the way that it has in years past, which that might just be the biggest disappointment for me when watching him this year. Yeah, that would certainly track. And I wonder, like, what is it just that we got to play better, or if there's an actual remedy or something that they could do differently to kind of turn things around before the season ends.
They got to play better. They got to improve their base. They got to sustain defense. That's not necessarily a Wolves problem. Sustaining defense is an NBA league problem. These offenses are putting pressure on you. But it can't be we guard the screen, we do a good job, we defend the first drive, we do a good job, and now, oh, there's a cut. Mm-hmm. They have to get rid of those type of possessions because you are going to have some question marks you have to answer come playoff time defensively that are beyond your base. And it's, can we get enough out of the drop from Rudy? Can we also toggle Cat and or Naz Reid being at the level and the mm-hmm. differences rotation wise behind that? And then can we deal with Cat being on the perimeter? It's only one game, and this is no disrespect to John Collins, but if there was a player's usage that you would want Cat to come back against, it's probably John Collins. I'm just saying. We saw earlier in the season where teams were like, oh, yeah, let's put you one pass away. Let's help you figure out these help responsibilities. Are you going to show help? Are you going to close back out? How's that going to look? So now if teams are able to kind of hit all of those things in a playoff series, what do you do?
You hope they score. And that's where you give the hat tip to the shot making that we've seen from Anthony Edwards over the past few months. We know what Cat can do as a scorer. Like the growth from Jaden McDaniels as a scorer is important. Nearly more than doubling his pick and roll volume from pre-All-Star break to All-Star break now. And looking more comfortable with the ball. Mike Conley has been relied on to take a lot of tough shots for the Wolves as of late. And he has canned those, shooting well over 40% from three since the All-Star break. And so like they have the guns. And then what Naz Reid has done, like Naz Reid has just been good off the bench this year. Like I still have my questions about the defense, and you've already hit on those, but like the spacing that he can provide above the break as a guy that's willing to take those shots and can stretch bigs out. And if they do try to close out on him, he has enough of a dribble game to get downhill. Like he just seems more refined as a driver this year. I don't think Minnesota wants to live in a world to where they're trying to win games 128-121. Like that is the literal opposite of the reasoning of bringing Rudy Gobert into the fold when you made the big trade. But they do have the horses to kind of live in that world for a game or two. If this is a team that winds up sliding into play-in for any reason, like, you can hang your hat on that, or at least have a little bit of optimism there that they can do that. Also glad you referenced Taurean Prince earlier in your comments, because he's been very important for them in terms of their lineup versatility, just having another trustworthy forward out there, the spacing that he provides, at least being comfortable to switch across both forward positions. And very quietly, the Wolves are 27 and 21 in the games that Naz Reid has played in, which really pops, that Taurean Prince has played in, which really pops for a team that's like 500 right now. It shows the impact that he's had, either off the bench or starting. But yeah, the Wolves remain weird. Just keeping an eye on what the cat usage is going to look like moving forward, how they bring Anthony Edwards back into the fold and what that's going to look like, and just which Rudy Gobert are we going to get to close out the season. Because like there is room for better productivity on both ends of the floor for him. And you know, so we've seen it look just bad. Bobbling catches, missing layups, the drop being too conservative for him, some of the contests not being as strong as they were in years past. We've also seen him have quarters or halves where he just, you cannot score on him. Or he's creating extra possessions on the offensive glass, finishing through contact, getting to the free throw line. Like, he has to bottle more of that. I think that's still in there for him. So we will just have to see what it looks like for Minnesota. On to the Oklahoma City Thunder, currently in eighth place in the Western Conference, also 500 right now, 36-36. They are 8-7 since the All-Star break, though I will note they are 6-2 in the games that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has played since the All-Star break, 2-5 without him. So that's a pretty big split there. How have your thoughts on the Thunder evolved as the season has gone on?
Okay, should we going to start a Thunder segment and ask me the question? This is your time.
I'm going to have to clean it up.
Going to have to clean it up, he says. Yeah, goodness gracious. Dude, the funny part is I've complimented the Thunder all year long. I just want y'all to hit the brakes every now and then. Easy there. Like, just relax a little bit. But this is a team who knows who they are. Every time we've watched them play, they are going to drive. They are going to cut. They are going to move the ball, and they are going to give effort defensively. And they're going to do that every single night. They play with poise. They play with confidence. They have an identity that they lean on. It's, to me, the more I think about it, it reminds me, if you look at the overall, a smaller version of when Memphis started to figure it out. And now they made this surge, and you could see things clicking for every single one of their guys, everyone kind of leveling up at once. Because we can talk about Shai, and we are going to talk about Shai, but this doesn't work if the whole isn't there. This doesn't work if they don't have the buy-in to give the effort defensively. This doesn't work if Jaylen Williams, J-A-Y-L-I-N, the big one, I forgot the nickname they gave him, Jay Will. Is that,
I think, yeah.
The one who plays the five, right?
There we go. Though, I mean, it is OKC, so maybe it might be the other one too. But no,
it doesn't work if he doesn't step into that five role and deliver the goods defensively. Because we've talked about OKC shuffling and finding a way to turn some of those, I guess, hybrid wings into, you just do the stuff at the five. Whether it's, you know, Darius Baisley or Opoku or Jeremiah Robinson Earl. You have enough of those things. Just also add this drop coverage and we'll be all right. But Jaylen Williams has done a great job of providing that timing, that spacing. It really feels like he's getting exposed on the defensive end, which is really important for this group in that lineup. And he's knocking down shots on the other end. I don't have the exact percentages, but you can't just leave him wide open. The makes he has have impact.
Just going to sprinkle in 41.3% on 3.1 attempts for center Jaylen Williams since the All-Star break.
Yeah. So, I mean, now all of a sudden you have someone who can screen and roll, and you're not going to want to switch against Shai. This doesn't work if Josh Giddey isn't playing at this level with this kind of confidence, getting in the paint. And not just getting in the paint, but looking to score, attacking if you want to slide under, if you want to be in a drop, looking to get to the free throw line, making plays. It doesn't work if you don't have the versatility that Jaylen Williams brings to the table and how fun he's been all season. His poise jumps out. he never looks rattled. He may not make the shot, but he's making the decision. A force when it comes to cutting, when it comes to driving, when it comes to bailing them out. So in those non-Shea minutes, you may have a Giddey or a Jalen Williams that you can lean on, and they can make those plays. Doesn't work if Lu Dort doesn't do what Lu Dort does. If Isaiah Joe isn't knocking down threes to this level, and that's not all he does, but he is knocking down threes left and right, folks. The whole of what they bring to the table makes it tough for teams because it's not necessarily the play that's going to get you. It's the play after the play. It's the consistent drive. Okay, you defended this play. Now we're going to drive. Now someone's cutting on the weak side. You watch Thunder. Look how many cuts you see on the weak side. Now we're moving the ball. It's not necessarily one thing that you can lock in on, even though you can game plan for Shea. What's behind that is still going to get you. So, and I asked you, and I asked you again, when's the last time that you saw the Thunder just rattled?
I can't say that I've seen the Thunder rattled. Like, the closest I came to seeing, like, rattled was the beginning of the Clippers game earlier this week, where it was just strip after live ball turnover after live ball turnover with Shea against the Clippers early in that first quarter. And by the end of the first quarter, Thunder lead 25-23. It's like, ah, I see. What was it like? The Clippers were 18-4 early in the first quarter. I'm like, oh, this is not ideal. This game has playoff implications. It's the Russ revenge game, the Shea revenge game, et cetera, on down the line. And they turned around that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, they don't stop.
And before you start on cleanup on aisle nine, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander has been incredible all season long. The straight line drives are just insane. You have to show bodies against this man. If you don't show early help, he's finding a way to find those little slivers of space. Not even changing speeds. I don't even know how to describe it. It's just, hey, I'm here and now I'm gone. And he's finishing. He's getting to the line, which I'll leave alone out of respect for you, Nikias.
Here we go.
And what that does is you can just flow into that. You're going to get the defense's attention. He can start a possession. He can end a possession. And they're mixing in the post-ups for him as well. So now, okay, maybe I get a face-up. I get a closer drive or something like that. How our team's going to react. And another thing they do is, because we haven't quite seen the amount of double teams or teams really specifically game planning. You know, I think we've mentioned it on the pod a couple of times. We've seen teams show early bodies or try and help on the spin. But when you watch the Thunder, I want you to look at the spacing sometimes and look at the work they do to empty out a wing for Shea when he's at the top of the key. Mm-hmm. To take away a body from being able to show early help. So if you have two on the left side, and you'll see sometimes they'll just have someone loop from the wing to the other wing, and as soon as that happens, Shea will attack. Or they'll loop Isaiah Joe from the right wing to the left wing, and now you're thinking help. He's seeing you think help, and then he's kicking Isaiah Joe real quick. Just those little things they do to branch off what Shea brings to the table, I think is so key. So, that's my salute to the Thunder.
Oh, there we go. Well done. Well done. Just to bounce off of that portion, like, for a guy that has the ball in his hands as much as Shea does, like, I really do appreciate how much of a moving target that he is. And you see that with just how they're altering the spacing for him, using the guard screeners to kind of shift the defense before he gets going, just the different places that he catches the ball on the floor. Loves the ISO on the he'll get a post up on the block. He'll get a clear out from the wing. Using him as a screener, like, OKC has been spamming guard screens all year long. And some of those are just dummy actions just to get you moving. Some of those are just to get someone else involved. Some of those to create advantages for whoever the ball handler is. They do all of that stuff. So even if you are attempting to gear up on Shea, you can't really do so comfortably. And to your early point about having Jalen Williams in the fold as well, being able to space him and feel good about it is a positive. Being able to have him above the break, period, is a positive because of what he does as a screener and what he does as a handoff hub. Shaking his brain the ball up, pitch it to him, flow right into a handoff, get downhill, get it on the move, if necessary, or he'll cut through. And now it's just Jalen flowing to the other side. And now it's Jalen and the other Jalen, or it's Jalen and Josh Giddey, and you flow from there. And now you have Shea moving off the ball. And having him as a final boss for possessions is a luxury. Like the fact that they can move defenses without really using Shea on the ball speaks to the kind of system that they built. And if all things break down, yeah, toss it to Shea Gilgeous-Alexander with 8 seconds on the clock. There will be 14 seconds soon because of a foul, or he'll be shooting free throws, or he will just get a bucket. It's just so difficult to deal with what he does. I think what's kind of been popping for me, especially when I started doing like prep for, stat prep for the Thunder ahead of this pod, like just looking at their defense, half court defense has remained very good. Third and half court defense since the All-Star break. The transition defense has fallen off of a cliff. And I thought back to the Thunder game where it's just a bunch of live ball turnovers. And sure enough, you go to clean the glass and see like what the points per possession allowed is off of like, just off of steals. They are towards the bottom of the league in that. Like, okay, that makes sense. I think, and the one thing that you've hit on as we watch the Thunder during the watch parties is they are a very active defense. I think the swarming is part of what makes them such a good defense. Like what they don't have in traditional size, I think they just have in ground coverage. They have a lot of speed. They can switch pretty comfortably, but ultimately they sink into the paint very, very, very aggressively. And part of the reason why the transition numbers are as wonky as they are, because even in transition, and thank goodness for cleaning the glass for being able to filter this, like you can see what percentage of shots are coming at the rim versus three versus mid-range, whatever, in transition. Fourth lowest share of shots allowed at the rim in transition. They get back and they take that away. Teams are just absolutely blitzing them from three-point line post All-Star break, a little over 48% from three. I don't think that's sustainable. I do wonder, and I can toss this question to you, like, do you think some of the activity what we've seen post All-Star break, because I do feel like they're swarming, they're flying around a little bit more, and it's something that you pointed out. Do you think this is because the point of attack hasn't been as strong as it was earlier year, or do you think it's like conceptually we want to do more to take away the rim and we're okay with giving up more threes than we have been?
I think it's a combination of their concept and youth. When you look at their defense, they do fly around, they do show help, they show bodies, they recover pretty well, and they defend on a string for the most part. It hasn't hurt them as much as my mind wants to tell me it could or it should because of the effort they give, but I think it's an activity thing more than anything else. They want to make sure that they are in their positions, they want to make sure they're communicating, they want to make sure they're helping each other, and they're pretty consistent with that. So I can't necessarily fault them for that, even though I'm kind of like, this could get hit at some point. Mm-hmm. To a degree, it kind of reminds me of the Timberwolves from last year, where that activity gave them a base and gave them something to work with. But if you did the right things, you could hurt that base because they had to rotate. And so that's where, as this goes down the stretch, and if they are able to make the playoffs or even the play-in, what does that look like in that setting? You know, because they do a good job of sprinkling in zone. They're athletic. They're long, very position based. But can teams really crack it? And that's kind of my overarching theme with appreciating this Thunder team, but now wondering what it looks like whenever a team puts a light on them. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm kind of like, it'd be kind of interesting if they were in a series right away. Yeah. No disrespect to anyone, but it'd be interesting to see what's that look like. What's it look like when a team really digs into the Thunder and prepares a game plan to take things away? Because I love the flow they play with offensively. The pressure they put on teams by saying, hey, we're going to drive. And if y'all aren't ready to defend dribble penetration, you're cooked. And if you are, we're still going to keep moving the ball. So it's not like we're just going to, you know, drive and stop. It's okay, cool, I don't have it. Swing, swing, swing. And now you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And then what do they do to teams? What do teams do to them on the other end? Who they let to attack? You know, Josh Giddey has been able to not be in as much action as he potentially could be, I guess is the way that I'd like to put it. Mm-hmm. And that's no discredit to him. It doesn't look like it did last year, but at the same time, when he gets put into action, it's not, no thanks. I'm going to be right here.
So no, no, Lou got it.
Our team's going to key in on that, or what's that going to look like? Are they going to keep swinging the ball? Like, I'm intrigued.
I got you. Like, I think as annoying as it can be for some people to watch, like, this is also why I think just their ability to draw offensive fouls is important to what they do, because that helps clean up some of the swarming that they do defensively. Like, I think, you know, to both our points, like, they naturally, they're flying around. They're showing early hope, they're closing out. They're trying to get reattached, whatever, whatever. If there are miscues there, it helps to have center Jalen Williams, who is already best charge taker in the NBA. It helps to have him cleaning up some messes. It helps that Josh Giddey can also do that. It helps that Shea also is willing to do that. And that sets its own tone. So I think the game plan question is an interesting one. And I think it's a fair one. Like, I do wonder if teams are able to pick at their lack of interior size in any way, or if they're able to do that across the series. Because I think if you can really hit the paint against them, then that becomes an issue. Like, I don't think they really have the horses to deal with that type of game plan. This is just why, again, they've been so aggressive post All-Star break. Like, we are not giving up rim shots if we can help it. We are showing even more help early. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I think that's another thing that where they get hurt in transition, when they're not able to load up, when they're not able to get maybe the matchups they want, when they're not able to get in that kind of positioning to take the things they want to take away. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, I think they get dinged a little bit. But continue.
Well, I think that's fair. And just to bounce off of that, like I mentioned earlier, like in terms of the percentage of shots allowed at the rim in transition, very low. When teams get to the rim against them in transition, roughly 81% shooting at the rim, which is a bottom three mark in the league. So, you know, speaks to not being able to load up. Also speaks to, even if they get back in time, it might just be a 6'5 guy, 6'6 guy. Like, even when Jalen Williams is stationed above the break and you get a miss or a turnover and he's one of the first people back, like, he's still 6'8. And he still doesn't have a ton of vertical pop either. And so, like, I just wonder, like, to, you know, bounce off of your point, like, when does that get hit to a significant degree? What does that look like? Just a quick hat tip to wing Jalen Williams, who has just been incredible in the year 2023. Like, what growth have you seen from him as a creator as the season's gone on?
I mean, again, it's, to me, it's just his overall composure. The way that he's able to read defenses, the way that he's able to get downhill. It never feels forced. It just feels aggressive. And he's never afraid to make the right play over and over again. Mm-hmm. Because he has that blend where you're not necessarily sure how he's going to hurt you or where he's going to hurt you, it could be the guard screen. It could just be a swing and now I'm attacking one-on-one. It could be someone else attacking. Now I'm cutting backdoor. I think he doesn't get enough credit for his backdoor cutting because you put him in the corner and buddy.
Yeah, sag off if you want to.
I hope you're not ball watching because as soon as you do, I feel like the majority of the Thunder games I've watched have involved a back cut and a very hard dunk. So, and I also think having Shea helps him because, you know, I liked his ability to operate in pick and roll and the composure he had and the reads he can make, but he doesn't have to do that every single time. So he's not having to carry that type of load. And now he can just kind of play freely. I'm space, defense helps. I shoot. I get a swing. I attack. He makes quick decisions. He's just under control. He's just he's one of my favorite players to watch play the game.
All right. Plenty of Jalen love. We like it.
I have to by default. That was literally the only rookie that I was allowed to talk about with Mark.
Allowed Schindler. To talk about. Is that the framing we're going with? Okay, fine. One last Thunder question for you, and then we can move to the next team. We're seeing Ujman Jang get more playing time with the second unit, a little bit more Lindy Waters, some Aaron Wiggins being sprinkled in a little bit more since Kenrich Williams has been out with injury. We've talked about Isaiah Joe, but just how have you seen the second unit kind of come along post-All-Star break?
They're playing well together.
That is tremendous.
Here's my thing. Here's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
I don't know if the league adjusted to how good Oklahoma City is. And I don't know if they really bought into what this team could do. To the degree of, I can imagine the scouting report potentially being light on the second unit.
Ah, I see. It's one of those, we know Isaiah Joe can shoot. We mostly know that Lindy Waters can shoot 37% from three post All-Star break. Ujman getting minutes is interesting to me. Like, I have no idea where the shot is going to land for him. But, like, you talk about someone that can fly around defensively and make some plays off the ball. Like, that's already fun. He's already had some fun passing flashes against scrambling defenses. That's going to be fun. I'm curious to see like how he factors in as we get closer to the end of the season. Like, I don't know if he's going to be in the playoff rotation or not. But there's been enough there that I'm intrigued by.
Their second unit speaks more to their style and finding people that fit what they like to do and now being able to put them into those same spots. You know, if you look at the players you named, their skill sets match up. They may not do everything that the starting lineup does, but they can do most of it. So now you can plug and play. It reminds me again of Memphis. I hate to compare it, but it's like, okay, next man up. You fit what we do.
I got you. Well, let's move on to the Dallas Mavericks, coming off of a controversial and important loss to the Golden State Warriors on Wednesday night. Now 36-37, a game and a half back of Golden State. They have fallen to 5-8 since the All-Star break. Eighth in offense, 25th in defense, elite half-court offense, fourth, 24th in half-court defense. What do we make of this Mavericks team right now?
I don't know what to do with it, man. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know what to do with Dallas. I have no idea what to do with the Dallas Mavericks. I did not think they would be in ninth post Kyrie Luka trade. Now, obviously, there's been both those guys been out for periods of time, so I still don't think we have the totality to judge that group. But I don't know if there's any new ground with this Dallas team. They kind of are who they are at this moment, and it's more how much do you believe in what they could do than can they elevate. At least in my opinion. Maybe it's because I've watched too much Dallas this year. Because we know about the play of Luka, right?
Yeah, he's good at basketball.
For any new listeners, pressure points, puts defense in the blender, hurts all your coverages, post up, make you double, creates all the opportunities for Dallas whenever he has the ball because you have to make a decision. Get them scrambling, get them in rotation. Can Dallas keep them in rotation? Can they make them pay? The Kyrie part is where I'm kind of like, okay, where are they going with this? Because I was enthused by the beginning of Kyrie in Dallas and what he could do to boost their lineups, what he could do to boost their movement. We saw early returns as far as him being a playmaker who can also put pressure on defenses and make them pay. We saw Kyrie coming off screens and Luka being the one that's getting passes because of defense and rotation. We saw Kyrie involved more movement sets. We saw Kyrie one pass away from Luka post-ups. And hey, are you going to double? Are you going to help? What are you going to do? And then I feel like defense is adjusted. And it was just like, this is interesting what you've put in front of us. We're just going to double. That seemed to work. And we're just going to pre-rotate to Kyrie to make sure that that's taken away. And now, Dallas, you are in the same bind.
Good luck.
You were in the same boat. It's a little nicer, a little fancier, but it's the same stuff. And then it felt like some of the non-Luka minutes, especially when he was sitting out, it felt like defenses were like, okay, Kyrie, here's this drop, man. We're going to be physical, and we're going to make you either make a bunch of shots or kick it out and then recover. Because it's going to be an easier recovery if we're in a drop than if we put two on the ball against you. And that's like, okay. Well, that takes a little bit off the menu. And then a couple teams were like, oh, you know, we're just going to switch. It's like, oh, that kind of bogs things down a little bit. And now I find myself asking more questions because this is a team that can generate pressure. Like I've said that all year. That's been my belief in them. They have Luka. Defenses have to react. Things are going to open up. But can they make them pay? Like, what is their best lineup, Nikias?
I wish I could tell you, Steve. All I know is that it includes Luka, it includes Kyrie, it includes Josh Green, okay, and Jason Kidd would like for it to include Maxi Kleber. And I would lean for it including Maxi.
Okay.
After that, who's to say? Like, we've seen Dwight Powell, like Tim Hardaway Jr., he's shooting 50% from three post All-Star break. So if he's shooting at this clip, then yeah. But also, it's Josh Green on the wing defensively, and who else do you trust?
Reggie Bullock, apparently.
Yeah, and then also like the stretch where Justin Holiday was starting over Josh Green, and then that was quickly excised. Do we just need to have a Jason Kidd conversation, or
is no, that not yet. No, not yet. Okay. No, okay. No. This all is right. Too, then we got a lot of content left to get to, buddy.
All right.
Pull the plug on that one. Get the battery out of your back.
Okay, executive decision. Cool. All right. Cool.
Well, no, we'll bookmark that. But okay. Go ahead, guys.
Jaden Hardy has been fun. He has been scoring at a high clip. No, I think the lineup questions are valid. And I think as good as the offense has been, especially statistically, like it still feels like it's defaulting a lot into we are going to make these other guys beat us, which like that isn't inherently a bad thing. But like part of bringing Kyrie into the fold is that it goes from, all right, Luka ain't beating this crap. We got to deal with this. And if teams are comfortably saying, all right, Luka ain't doing it and we make sure Kyrie ain't doing it and we're still not scared, that's a rough place to be in. Obviously, I haven't had to deal with that since Kyrie's been out. They are 1-3 in those games without Kyrie. Naturally, need that second creator, which it's sad that we've gotten back to this point where it's like, okay, who's the number two alongside Luka now? Like, in theory, that would be like Christian Wood, but because of defense reasons and whatever else, it's not really consistently Christian Wood. And to that point, like sub 30% from three post all-star break, like the finishing hasn't necessarily been the same. The post-ups haven't hit the same. I don't know how much of that is just random blip, small sample size versus I don't know where my minutes are coming from. So the comfort isn't there. I'm forcing more than I normally would. It's hard to kind of parse through what's affecting what and in which order it's being affected in. But like even the Wood minutes that we're getting now, haven't been the strongest. And if Christian Wood isn't high level scoring big, guy that can post up against mismatches, can get to the free throw line, can isolate and knock down jumpers, can pick and pop for you. If he isn't that guy at a high level, you're not getting the defense from him. Like we know that much. And it's starting to feel like chicken or the egg, like to where it's like, we don't want to play him because we know the defense is bad. But if we don't play them enough, the offense isn't in rhythm. And if the offense isn't in rhythm, it's not enough to justify playing them because of the defense. And it's like, how do you?
And now here's the other part of what you're saying to bounce off of it. What are other teams thinking? Mm-hmm. And this is one of my points I was going to ask because I had a few questions about the other guys. Christian Wood has been scoring. What's the impact on it, though? Mm-hmm. Is it changing how defenses are guarding him? Is it changing how defenses are guarding Dallas? His skill set was supposed to be a complement to open things up with Luka, to open things up with Kyrie. Where now, okay, you want to put two on the ball, we got to pop. You want to put two on the ball, we got to roll. You want to drop, we got to pop. You want to switch, throw it in the post. Cool, but it's not hitting the same level where defenses are like, oh, well, we got to stop Christian Wood. If he scores, okay, go at him on the other end, especially with the two big lineups, which they are going with a lot of them. Against Memphis, I'm looking at Dwight Powell and Christian Wood on the floor together, and I'm like, hmm. So now Christian Wood is now on the weak side, closing out. Okay, I'm looking at the Golden State game. I'm like, okay, so we have Josh Green, Maxi Kleber, and Powell on the floor to start the game. I'm like, okay, the Golden State's rotating, and also,
you got your best front court defenders out there, but like, what's being opened up on the other end? And for all the growth that Josh Green, I'll let you finish, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like all the growth that we've seen from Josh Green as a shooter, and he's still shooting well this year, like it still hasn't reached the holy crap, we got to run this guy off the line portion of the program with him yet, at least not consistently. Dwight Powell doesn't provide that. And yeah.
No, and that's been the issue. It's been the issue all year long. We've talked about it. These guys have to make defenses pay, and who's going to do it? Is Josh Green's confidence going to stay up? Or is he going to be able to make enough shots to make defenses blink? Tim Hardaway Jr., you spoke about his three-point shooting. I did it a few episodes ago. He's made, I believe, 2-for-14 in the last three games.
Not ideal.
In the month of March, Reggie Bullock has made 5 or more threes 3 times and has made 1 or less 3 4 times. That's a lot. Christian Wood hasn't played more than 30 minutes since January 18th. So who are the guys? Where's the balance? What's it going to be? Do you have your best lineups? Can you get close to your identity? And then defensively, can you drum up enough activity, enough help to at least fight.
I'm starting to lose some faith in that, honestly.
Now, you know, I'm a fair person, guys.
That's true.
And the defense part is the, probably the concerning part, because that's a part of the formula. Like, the formula is there. I just don't know if this team can hit the notes they need to on either end of the floor, where they're making shots to make teams pay and the defense is active enough to at least get some easy opportunities, or at least allow them to get, catch a flow and not always take the ball to the net. But again, Nekias, you have to deal with those two in a playoff setting. And I still don't know how many teams really want to sign up for that. Like, yeah. playoff game plan defensively, you should be able to do at least some more things to at least focus your team in a one deal. And this is a team that if they find something, they can just flip it on you. Like the Jazz series, it was, oh, drive over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Win. So that's that. I had one question that I wanted to ask you at the end of the Dallas. Did you have any other questions?
I will take your question.
I wanted to ask this to you, specifically you and you only.
Okay.
Just based on your takes over the time we've done this podcast, does Dallas give you Portland vibes?
Ah, I see. Man, in more ways than one. I'm a bit concerned. Oh, that's for the Patreon. But no, I am a bit concerned at where the defense has gotten. And like, I preface this by saying, like, Dorian Finney-Smith has not been a world beater in Brooklyn, much to my chagrin. But I will say, like, as the defense and the general activity has been baked into that formula, and like, they were surprisingly, and I wrote about it, surprisingly a top 10 defense last year. Like, I didn't think they were going to be able to hit that this year. And then post-trade, I definitely didn't think they're going to be top 10 level. Like, even the best and most engaged version of the defense, like, I feel like it's going to be 15th, 18th range in terms of defensive rating, which may be enough if the offense is going to be high level, and it mostly has been. I do think with this trade, they lost a little bit of their floor for their defense because the activity is baked in, but they also did have, like last year, like they had Dorian at least, to where like, okay, we know we got one really good guy that can take some pressure off of these other guys. And so now they have to show help and they have to be active, but they don't have to cover as much ground. We don't have to cover for as many drives because we know we at least got this one dude. And like without that, and Josh Green, I feel like has been a good defender this year. But like without that, there's even more pressure to be locked in and to be clean in terms of their rotations and to take away things at the rim if it gets there. And like they just haven't had enough. And I don't know if this personnel is enough to really get to the level that they needed to. And like now it's a double whammy if you're like zooming out to the trade, because now you don't have the Dorian defense and that kind of floor for you. Kyrie's been out, so you're not even getting the offense benefits on top of that. And so now it all feels worse. And I think that general formula is going to be like the offense has to be good enough, but ultimately like the half court offense has to be good enough. So that gives their half court defense more of a buffer to try to load up and take things away. And if you're sprinkling in like Luka injury or any kind of off Luka night with no Kyrie to buffer against that, or any of the Luka complaints after missed calls or whatever, and we can have a discussion about that if you want and where that's gone. It's just leading into like, I keep getting back to like, man, I don't know how much of a chance this defense has. And if I'm there, like, I don't know how much I care about the offense. And I don't mean that in a literal sense. Again, Luka's insane. And when Kyrie comes back, like when those two have been on the floor offensively, they have been insane. But like conceptually with this Dallas team, it's like, okay, how much does this really matter if you can't figure out who's playing in your front court, much less what are our coverages and how locked in are we? Like with Sacramento, and they've been a better offense than Dallas, but like with Sacramento, we've talked about it. We had Mark Jones on to have a deeper dive. We know what Sacramento is trying to accomplish. We know exactly what they're trying to do on both ends of the floor. And defensively, we know what they're trying to do. We know what the activity level is. We know what the weak spots are. We know what the rotation is. You know, we've had discussions about, okay, what are the strengths and weaknesses with some of the backup bigs and what happens when Sabonis is off the floor, whatever. But we know all these things. I don't know what I'm getting from this Dallas defense. And that probably feels worse than like what they're actually doing. Because I don't know what holes need to be plugged on in certain games. And then it's just like, okay, cool. We get more Maxey since he's healthy. He's shooting 30% from three since he's been back. What does it do for the offense? Okay, we got Dwight Powell in. More mobility, more solid play. He's still not a pure rim protector. And if his screen and rolls are becoming switches, what does he do? Cool. We got Christian Wood in. Bad on defense. Don't know what need to do there. Bad on defense. Now we have him at the four alongside another center. Okay, now we're highlighting the worst parts of his we might be highlighting the worst parts of his defense. And he's not knocking out shots from the perimeter right now either. So, like, even if you're using him as a spacer at the four, if you're playing alongside Dwight Powell and Dwight's rolling and you have him space somewhere, teams are happy to help off of him. I just don't like where Dallas is. Aside from Jaden Hardy. Jaden Hardy's been fun. He's been good. I like that he's getting minutes. I like that he's gotten more creation reps. He's dropped many a buckets over the past couple of weeks. Like, that's been fun. It kind of stinks that he's getting the burn now. Like, I wish that was something that they leaned into earlier in the year, especially as some of the injuries started popping up. Like, I think there was always a little bit of room for him since they've been looking for creation. And obviously Dallas agreed because they made the swing for Kyrie to add more creation into the room. But it's been fun for Jaden Hardy. So not much to work. Shout out Jason Kidd for saying offensively he's been great. Defensively, he's trying his best, which is probably the nicest way you could say I don't like the defense right now. But yeah, like, Dallas has been a frustrating watch as of late. I'll put it that way. I guess we will table the other Dallas related conversation. To Steve's favorite team in the West and the West play-in picture, the Los Angeles Lakers. 9-5 since the All-Star break. They are a game and a half behind Golden State right now, though they're in 10th, only half game ahead of Utah and New Orleans. But again, 9-5 since the All-Star break, 19th in offense. They have the best defense in the NBA post-All-Star break. 20th in half-court offense, first in half-court defense. They're 15th in transition offense, 6th in transition defense in terms of points per possession allowed, but teams run very frequently against them. Steve, what has popped for you with this Lakers group as of late?
It's the defense. I mean, my main reaction once they made the trade was, okay, a lot of this makes more sense for what they're trying to do, what they're attempting to do. This is a team that now has more size and they have more length. They have a Jared Vanderbilt who can take on a lot of different assignments and help them. They have more people who can do their job defensively to, at the very least, okay, we're taking some things off the menu. We're navigating screens, we're being physical. And now we can allow Anthony Davis to do a lot more of the contain and rim protection type things, which makes him, when the conversation happens, one of the better defensive players in this league. Mm-hmm. And I think that combination has been effective as far as where they were before defensively, where they didn't necessarily have the size, they weren't able to bog teams down. I think this is probably the most we've seen teams have to go late in the shot clock against the Lakers than normally. But when you're able to have that combination in those different guys, at least, you know, battle, it makes a difference. And then offensively, it just, again, feels like the pieces fit better. D'Angelo Russell, his skill set fits better with what Los Angeles needs from a point guard. I think the growth of Austin Reeves has been really good. You know, this is something we saw in the preseason. When he gets the ball in his hands, he's aggressive, he can make some plays. So now you're seeing him come off handoffs, you're seeing him come and pick and roll. I'm not talking about free throws with him right now. I'm not going to talk about the fact that, you know, 90 of his 219 free throws have come in the month of March, and I think 53 of those have come in the last four games. We don't have to discuss that here on the Dunker Spot. But there's the information if you'd like to go yell at someone about it.
Try guarding him. They can't guard him. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
But I think that everything makes a little bit more sense. People are in their role, and then the bench lineups also make sense. So again, they have size, they have length, they have people who know exactly what they're supposed to do, and it's working right now for them. Now, you never know which way the offense is going to go, but they've worked themselves in a position to get this done. Now, I will say this.
Here it is.
Well, this is an interesting stretch to close the season with limited wiggle room, right?
Mm-hmm.
The 16-20 Lakers have a 5-game road trip. Now, one of those is technically at the Clippers.
So home like, game.
Yeah. But you play an Oklahoma City team on a Friday, which doesn't seem ideal. Then you have to play versus Chicago. Then you go to Chicago. You play at Minnesota. You play at Houston. You play at Utah. You play the Clippers.
Not the discipline road trip and stuff.
It could get interesting. LeBron will be back on the 7th.
Do we know that? Because, you know, his tweet, you know.
Unconfirmed reports. Wait, which tweet? What do you say now?
It capped off with God bless your sources. I was like, oh, all right. I see.
Oh, can I be respectfully messy?
Yes.
Let's check the standings. The Lakers are a half game ahead of Utah, half game behind Minnesota, game and a half behind Golden State. They got to get to 7.
Oh, that's a tremendous shot. That's a tremendous. Hey, you can get this together. We don't need any more of them there slips.
Like, now this is cool. Keep it going. I'm gonna get this right, but, you know.
I see. Well, one, this has been honestly, if I can just ask a question, like you've already talked about him a little bit, but just the Anthony Davis stretch, like how have you felt about his usage in the non-LeBron game so far? I found myself going back and forth on it.
Back and forth. Well, I mainly, actually, to be honest, I like the fact that he's getting a lot more elbow touches and they're able to play out of that a little bit. I think it gives them variety. It gives them movement, gives them options. I haven't necessarily felt poorly about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a topic of discussion for Laker Nation as far as is he impacting the game? Should he be impacting the game more? I leave that alone because I protect my peace.
Fair.
So I'm fine with it. I guess the question is, what would you want to see? A whole bunch of post-ups? I think you get Anthony Davis's numbers, but mm-hmm. if Anthony Davis post-ups are now just going to make teams double, that's a positive for you. So do you spam those or do you spread them out? Do you get movement? Do you get the ball in Austin Reeves' hand, runs pick and roll? Like, what's the balance that you want to see? Because for me, if you could take what Anthony Davis is doing well and translate that into, hey, we need to defend that, that's a plus for the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're able to have the balance and have Austin Reeves and Russell able to do these type of things, I think that's a win for this group to find something outside of their stars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, with the Anthony Davis touches, it's more so like there are pockets as there have always been pockets with Anthony Davis to where he can assert himself more, even within his touches. Like you talked briefly about the Anthony Davis post-ups. Like I think there's value to those with this configuration that draws double teams, depending on where he's catching the ball to start these post-ups. Like it was particularly bad, I want to say, it's either second or third quarter of the Suns game last night, to where he's getting, they're running stuff for him. Like it's a cross screen for him. He's catching the ball in the 3-point line. It's just like, no, you're not going to get, it's not going to get the best out of you. It's not going to get the best out of this offense when you are the focal point. Like there's no LeBron on the other side of the floor that you can swing the ball to and let him create something out of. If you're the guy, like you have to be in optimal positions. I think there's just generally a tendency for him to kind of float either within his touches or, if D'Lo's cooking, if Austin Reeves is using like Jared Vanderbilt as a screener or whatever case may be, there's a tendency for him to kind of float. I don't get into Anthony Davis doesn't have heart. He doesn't want it. Like, I think all that's kind of dumb. Like, I don't think we need to get into all that kind of stuff. I do think there are pockets to where he can assert himself a little bit more and that can make the offense flow better. Like, that could get him more efficient looks. That will force more defensive attention. And that's either more free throws for him. That's an easy kick for him. And LA's able to play out of that. Because I do think there has been some stagnation in the half-court offense for LA during this stretch. And so, like, I think he could do a little bit more to impact that. also, and I guess I'm with you, I'm not going to talk too much about the Austin Reeves free throws. I will say it's nice that the Lakers have someone else that can get to the rim. And Austin Reeves has done a good job of doing that. It's like generally D'Lo, he's a pull-up guy. He's not going to get a bunch of paint touches. Like Dennis Schroeder has also been like a paint touch guy, but like he's kind of tailed off as of late. And so like I'm glad that Austin Reeves has been able to pick up some of that slack at the very least. But yeah, like I think that's kind of where I go. Like in terms of the types of plays that are being ran for him, like I don't have a huge issue. Like it'd be nice to get him on the move a little bit more instead of just, hey, we're going to cross screen him, get him a catch here and then just clear out. Like there's a little bit more variety that can be sprinkled in, but I don't have a major issue. I think it's more so like what he's doing within those is where I'm raising the brow.
Well, if you want to get me on Anthony Davis rant, it's just, hey, can we use him in different ways like we have before or it has been done before in the past and let that work? Can we get a pin down for him? Can we get other cuts for him? Use him as a ball handler? That's my beef with it. Y'all can talk about the impact. Let's get the usage, the variety back up. Too versatile of a big in a league that embraces versatile bigs for it to just be cross-screen post-up from 20 feet away, which I'm sure you love. But again, this is a guy who, if you look at this month, three of his last four games, he has 10 or more free throw attempts. Is that not a plus?
It is.
I think he's done it five times total this month. Did it once in February. Did it once in January. A few times in December. But how do you balance the impact versus aggression versus balance of the team? Like, I hear you, but also.
Yeah, I think that's fair. What did I want to ask you? I had a second unit question. I'm trying to figure out how I want to phrase.
I think I like Malik Beasley with the second
unit. Yeah, I think I mean, I do. Yeah.
I think that I do. Give him some movement. Let him do his thing. I always find it funny when Laker fans just go back and forth with Malik Beasley as if he's not a volume shooter.
It's almost like the tenor of the conversation around Malik Beasley are directly hinged upon if he's making threes or not.
It's just wild. Malik Beasley, I told you, yeah. Why are you shooting so much?
Well, did you see Malik Beasley? In many, did you see him in Utah? This to take the dunker spot watch party tagline. This is what he does.
It's what he does. You if you want the 7 of 12 3-point game, you got to live with the 4 of 12 3-point game, and then you got to live with the 3 of 13 over 3-game stretch. It's just how shooters work. You can't just sub a shooter out because he missed a couple shots. Because guess what they're going to be doing the next time?
Shooting.
They're going to shoot, or they're going to think about it and not shoot. And buddy, when a shooter stops shooting, you can be real mad.
Oh boy. On the to the forward room very quickly. Like one, the big cloud hovering over this is LeBron's gonna hopefully come back soon. And we'll see what that does for the lineups, what it does for the hierarchy, et cetera, et cetera. Just a hat tip to Troy Brown Jr. for just playing well on both ends of the floor. Like his minutes against Devin Booker last night were pretty positive, but even just extending to this post All-Star game stretch. Like he's all, for me at least, he's always been a guy that I kind of trust as a connector against scrambling defenses. And it feels like this is really the first time that it's actually popping at a high level. I think he's done a good job knocking down shots, keeping things moving offensively. That's the kind of wing that they've needed this year.
No, the shot making helps, but the best thing for him is the consistency as far as doing his job. I'm providing a little bit of everything. I can knock down some shots. I can guard. You can trust me decision-making-wise offensively. You know what I'm bringing to the table. And I think that's an important evolution for his game and his career. You know, obviously he's a guy who probably wants to land a home, but at the same time, whenever Troy Brown goes to a place, it's been, okay, well, can he do this one thing for this team? Or is he going to do this one thing for this team? And here, it just kind of feels like he's more, there's more room for him to be himself, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes sense. It's good that he's popped. I hate that it's kind of come at the expense of Lonnie Walker, who just doesn't seem to factor in heavily into the rotation at this point.
You can only play so many wings, man.
That's true. That's true.
You can only play so many wings. And if we have the volume shooter that we need in Malik Beasley, Lonnie Walker, you are now in case of emergency. Ah. You are in U-up status.
Okay. Well, we will we'll always have that November from Lonnie Walker. I don't, how do you
even, like, are you up, are you up to the challenge to compete? Yeah, when we need you in limited minutes.
Yeah, and embrace the challenge reference is exactly what we needed after that bar. To the teams on the peripheral of the play-in conversation, Utah again half a game back from the Los Angeles Lakers for 10th. The Pelicans also half game back. Utah ahead with some tiebreaker, I would imagine. I guess of those two teams, like, do you see either of them making a play-in push? Like, they're obviously right there, but, like, who do you have more faith in? I guess the easiest way for me to ask that.
The easiest way to answer that is, let me look at these schedules. they both have their question marks. I would still probably put more faith into the Pelicans. If for nothing else, because of the talent they have, even though they are missing Zion, if they can remember what brought them success when it comes to their offense and their ball movement and their usage of Ingram and CJ and Jonas Valanciunas together, mixed in some Trey Murphy, I think if they can find that again, continue to move forward defensively with the right effort and with the right mindset, they can still make a push. And, you know, because of the standing, it's going to feel a little bit like last year, but I think they can make a push. It's no disrespect to Utah, who is competing, working their tails off. They brought the zone back. Walker Kessler is working. Lauri Markkanen has been incredible. Oche Agbaji has justified everything I said about him pre-draft. My only other person that I talked about.
I had two. I'm two for two. We here.
So that's been fun to see. It's been a whole lot of THT and Chris Dunn, but we can talk about that later. I would probably put more faith into the Pelicans. What say you?
I want to put more faith in the Pelicans because I think their defense has been good. And again, I will say I've enjoyed the Herb Jones experience again on defense. That's been fun watching that perk up. I just have real question marks about this offense. Like, I understand that Zion is out and, like, not only is he their interior force and he's the guy that really moves and bends defenses. Like, I don't want to discount that. But, like, Brandon Ingram is back. You have CJ McCollum. You do have JV as a post hub. Like, I would think the foundation of those three would give you a better offense than what we've seen. It's just felt so stagnant and disjointed.
And no, that's, it has. Continue.
No, I was going to say, like, that's really, it's just bothered me in the games that I've seen from them post All-Star break. And, like, that's also, that also becomes heightened when you also have, like, Herb on the floor and how teams have treated him. Like, that's mucking up the spacing even more. And they have to get creative around that. Like, I've mostly enjoyed the Josh Richardson experience in New Orleans, but teams don't treat him like a 45% three-point shooter either. And so, like, I do understand, like, there are spacing concerns beyond what they're actually doing that hinders what they can do. But some of the decision-making and some of the ball movement or lack thereof has been a little bit concerning.
It's been the lack of movement. And they find it, they can tap into it, then they lose it. I think that's why I said they need to tap into how they used Brandon Ingram, CJ, and Jonas together last year. They need to get back to that because it was some beautiful basketball and set the tone. There's a key word you said, though, foundation. Mm-hmm. And we talk about this because I feel like they either forgot what got them the success with that group last year, or they forgot how to get to it. Mm-hmm. Because again, this is not like they were together for a very long time. You know, we could perceive it's like they were together for 3 years. It was just a really, really good stretch. So when you make the shift to, okay, we have this base, now let's integrate Zion, now let's move all of this to Zion, that's fantastic, except you don't have that base. That's not baked in. You assume it's baked in because you've seen it succeed. And, like, yeah, we'll just keep doing that. But once you lose that, what are you? I think that's been the dynamic for the Pelicans, for me at the very least, because when they make quick decisions, when they pass and they cut, it's still there. But when they have those moments where they're not moving the ball, when it's one pass, one dribble, one decision, guys aren't spaced in the right spots, like there's more in the cupboard than I think they've shown. Mm-hmm. But can they get to it? And the issue standing wise is they have no choice and they don't have a ton of time. Mm-hmm. I think with Utah, it's more, I don't even know how to phrase this.
Guard play, and what do they do without Laurie on the floor?
That's close. That's where I'm going. And then it's defensively, if we can attack everyone not named Walker Kessler, all right, we give ourselves a chance. But they're both going to fight like heck. I mean, Utah's won 4 of the last 6 games. But boy, their schedule's not kind.
It's not.
Have you seen Utah's schedule?
I was looking at it a little bit earlier.
Versus Milwaukee at Sacramento. That's a back-to-back, by the way, this weekend.
Oh, geez.
Home versus Phoenix, at San Antonio, at Boston, at Brooklyn, versus Lakers, versus OKC, versus Denver, at the Lakers. Well, I mean, they got a chance. They can control their destiny to a degree down the stretch, but...
Hey, man. I will just... Like, that sounds like the memorial. Nekias will take the L if he's wrong, but that don't sound good for Utah. That don't sound good for Utah, is I think where I land on that one.
Hey, man, the West is wild. All you need is a couple days. But unfortunately, the Blazers showed if you have a bad 5 days.
That's all it takes. And the Blazer did just beat Utah.
Yep.
Which, not ideal for the Utah Jazz. I guess we can cap it there. Like, do you think Portland has an outside shot? Do you think they can make the push, or do you think it's too little too late? They're 3.5 back of LA.
They have a 5-game homestand, is what I'll say. Mm-hmm. Problem is they've lost their last 3 home games. That hurt. That 6-game losing streak to go from 31-34 to 31-40 is a bad time for it. Everyone else is just kind of swinging left and right, and they was like, hey, wait a minute. If they're going to make the push, they have to at least win their next 3 to even, you know, they're going to have to rock this homestand. But they end with, they also have a road trip. Yeah, for them to re-enter the group chat, they're going to have to win at least 3 in a row.
So you're saying that they have to avoid carpet burn.
All right, man. You going to take a shot at the airport now?
No, I'm just... you said they had a road trip, so I figured. Do you have free throws?
I do.
What do you have?
Jaylen Brown. Is it Uchiwali or is it one mic?
Yes.
Why didn't Yuta Watanabe learn his lesson?
Hey, he told y'all after the first one, like, I'm going to keep jumping. I can get dunked on, you know. I'll keep leaping. I might get a block. You know, I ain't going to give up. I respect it.
Hey, I respect it. They're going to keep jumping too, though. All right. Wilder. Kyrie Irving not taking Dylan Brooks' jersey. Dylan Brooks offering his. And just standing there, or Dylan Brooks exiting the court like Roman Reigns with 2 jerseys.
Oh God. I think Dylan exiting like Roman Reigns is 1. Dylan offering the jersey 2, and then Kyrie not taking it 3. Cause like I would imagine that's at least a situation where you take it and then you like leave it in the locker room type beat. So you at least don't have the video of the dap and not taking the jersey as Dylan like, hey. So honestly, I might bump the Kyrie portion to 2. And then Dylan offering it being 3. Because like that's a very natural thing. He took Kyrie's jersey. But yeah, like, it, for optics at least, like take it and then just kind of leave it on the, you know.
Why did Dylan Brooks do Theo Pinson like that?
We could just have a, like, why did Dylan Brooks and cap it over the past, like, 3 weeks?
Hey, it's been a little bit. All right. While I'm on the jersey swaps, which jersey swap experience would you prefer, Nikias?
Okay.
The Kyrie Dylan Brooks jersey swap, the infamous club jersey swap, or Pat Bev's mom's jersey swap?
Oh God. I'm in the figure four lock. This is that I don't like this.
Oh yeah, you can't reach for the ropes. And just for clarification, you are Dylan Brooks in that scenario.
Ah, okay. Lord. I don't even know how to answer this one in good conscience. I guess I would shout out to the Dunker Spot Discord. You know, we'll have the Dylan Brooks Kyrie experience. These we can meme about it later.
Ah, the brand is like strong. The brand is strong, folks. The wholesome brand still exists. Stronger battery for Memphis. All the jokes they received, or it's a parade in my city. Yeah.
Oh, definitely the latter.
Okay. Just, are you prepared for it's a parade in my city? Yeah. And that just sending the Grizzlies to the finals.
I'll keep an eye on it. You know, that'll be cool. Not sure if that's going to be what happens, but I guess this is my early warning that it could, so I will prepare myself accordingly.
Okay, which final series would break people's brains more? Grizzlies Sixers,
this should be
or
good.
Nuggets Bucks?
Grizzlies Sixers or Nuggets Bucks? What would break the brain? Probably Nuggets Bucks will be my guess.
Okay. Slam Ball's on its way back. Good idea or bad idea?
I'm here for it. At least my nostalgia says this is a great idea.
Okay. Do we get which lasts longer, Slam Ball or the XFL?
You know, I mean, so how did the big three do? So, like, they were rolling. Like, haven't we heard like some stuff with gotta do some stuff to some stuff. I'm gonna go Slam Ball, but let's go Slam Ball.
Okay. Julius Randle scoring 52 points in three quarters and ending with 57 is the most Julius Randle way to do that, right?
Yeah. We called it the Joe Johnson. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. Joe Johnson just sitting. Man probably got up at 6 a.m. to do yoga and run. And anyways.
No, like, it's fun. Like, I remember, like, watching him in that hall. It was so, like, it felt like every other game. It's like Joe Johnson has 20 points in the first half and he finishes with 26. And it's like, brother. How we do, like, he was a bucket, he was very good, like, he was legitimately one of my favorite players growing up, but like, that was always funny to track.
All right, Luke Kennard says he's always been told to be aggressive and shoot more, but they've really been on him in Memphis. Does he know his job title and requirements?
Oh Lord. I have a follow-up question for the Patreon, but yeah, I'm sure that he knows his requirements now if he did not know them before.
This is a sales position, buddy. Are you allowed to file a formal complaint if one of your players gestured at the refs like he was Ted DiBiase?
Like, no off principle, but also that's pretty funny. Like, I don't know what you do with that. Man, I want to see where that goes. That feels like a very short conversation, but I want to see where that goes.
I'm sure the screenshots of the email will be out here shortly. Angrier, Tibbs at defensive errors or Monty Williams when the free throw disparity is wild?
I feel like Tibbs just stays in a perpetual state of anger. Okay. So I think the with the volume rising, I give the edge to Monty. Also, my brother in hoop, and also Christ. For long time listeners of the Dunker Spot, you know how I feel about Phoenix, especially during this era, and how good they've been. And you know what the primary thing that I've harped on the Phoenix Suns about during this era is putting pressure on the rim. It is driving to the basket. I am not surprised that the Suns are on the wrong end of free throw disparities, considering they have one driver that can consistently get free throws right now. And that is just a general Suns comment, not necessarily geared towards like the Lakers Suns game, because like I think there were, you know, like, some of the stuff could have gone either way. But like overall, am I surprised that they don't get to the line like that? No, not really.
Very glad you answered that. Way more overrated, rim protection or rim pressure?
Yeah, we have severely lost the plot, dog. We have lost the plot. Oh, Lord have mercy. Like, more overrated?
Hmm?
Like, more overrated is probably rim pressure. But, like, they're both very, very... No, you know what? Yeah, I guess... Technically, it's going to be rim pressure. Because, like, if you can draw a double team from anywhere, you can still create, like, fruitful looks. And, like, just in general, the math game, like, you take threes and score. So, like, I think that's it. But, like, they're both very, very, very important. Free throws are still the most efficient shots in basketball. And you get those more frequently, and it's more likely to gain free throws if you are attacking the basket, if you are generating paint touches, if you are pressuring the rim. And naturally, you want to prevent those shots on the defensive end. So rim protection is very, very important from preventing the most efficient shot in basketball from happening. I don't even know why we are questioning the value of rim protection. In this NBA in particular, the game is more spread out literally so you can get to the rim easier and get more of those shots at the rim. It would behoove you to protect the rim. Why are we here? Okay.
Folks, just to pull the curtain back, I've deleted a few of the free throws that I had because those two went way better than I thought they would. Thank you, Nikias. More unfair comparison, Mike Trout, the Jokic of baseball, or Jokic, the Mike Trout of basketball?
Oh, geez. Because, like, hey, man, has he been in the postseason? Like, I know the answer is he hasn't done anything significant in the postseason. But, like, has he been in the postseason yet?
I'm going to go with a quick uninformed no while I research this.
Yeah, I don't think he has. And to be clear, like, it's very much not his fault. Like, he is at worst like a top three player in baseball, at absolute worst. So, like, I'm not even blaming him. But, like, if we're going with which comp is more disrespectful, I guess, like, calling Trout the Jokic would count. Because, like, at least he's had playoff postseason success, or more postseason success, rather.
This here website says they ain't made it since 2014. So that'll do.
But even then, though, like, Mike Trout can hit. He's also a really good fielder, and like the Jokic defense, like we talked about that. You know what? That's a good question, depending on which angle you want to go with it.
Hey, should they just make a commercial for that baseball team, but use that song that they use for the dogs, the Sarah McLachlan song,
brother? Did you have more free throw?
Go Robles there, buddy. So why is it every time a team is up for sale, we find out about a new billionaire? And why do they all have creative player names?
Do you want my capitalism rant now? I don't think we got time. Okay, all right.
Power rank the PGs. I need you to power rank these PGs for me. I know you're big on the PG play. Push off P, playoff P, podcast P.
Okay, before I answer, do we know like which playoff run that playoff P was debuted in or before?
Let me do a
quick search. Was this Thunder Paul George? Because that changes my answer.
Playoff P, the origin of playoff P, September 3rd, 2020.
So he was a Clipper at that point, right? Or was that the last year in OKC?
I'm still scrolling.
In 2020. It would have been, we would do Clippers then if it was 2020.
Oh, nope. 2018.
So this is the Thunder.
Yep. Thunder against the Jazz.
Ah.
Y'all ain't met playoff P yet?
Ah, well, because it excludes the Indiana portion of his playoff history, I will have to rank that one last. We will go push off P second, because like, you know, that's funny, but also like some of those aren't called and he gets buckets. Number one is going to be podcast P. He's been doing a really good job. Like, unironically, that's a good pod to listen to. I would recommend it.
All right, who would you rather upset, Laker fans or the Swifties?
definitely Laker fans. Because, like, I don't have to worry about my address at that point.
Yeah, they're going to tell you more than the problem, buddy. Yep.
Oh, geez.
All right. Last one. It's a versus question. How you bring back LeBron or I want Iguodala?
You know, because like it's I want Iguodala by default. One, the preamble up into that answer is amazing. Everything about that delivery from Max Kellerman was tremendous. The answer was bad. But, like, everything about that delivery was hilarious. And, like, at least Andre Iguodala has made big shots. It's still very much the wrong answer by a hilarious amount. But, like, at least he's done some stuff. He has the finals MVP, whatever. Austin Reeves is playing well. What is LeBron going to do here? Ain't the whole bit in why the Russell Westbrook trade happened because we need to find a way to take some of this creation burden off of LeBron? We're getting this Austin Reeves in part because Russ ain't there. And I'm so. How do we simultaneously call LeBron like one of the greatest players ever, one of the highest IQ players ever, one of the most versatile players ever? And even just circling, zooming into this year, like a guy that is, I think I tweeted it out earlier, like fourth highest 3-point rate of his career. He's been playing off the ball. He said he wore on ball screens than he ever has per game. And in terms of on-ball screen rate, it's like the highest since the title year in Cleveland, so 15-16. Why are we just pretending LeBron just cannot do anything if he doesn't have the ball? And why are we making that argument in support of Austin Reeves? I don't quite get that one. Give me the Kellerman take. But, yeah. Also, rim protection and rim pressure matters, man. I can't believe this even became a thing. Way to rile me up within the last three questions. Well done. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at TheKaiusNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join the Dunker Spot watch parties. The room will be hyperlinked in the podcast description. So if it is hyperlinked with the app that you're using, just click on that, sign up. It's easy, no shenanigans, it's also free. Get your info in there. Come watch some basketball or wrestling or bowling or The Bachelor or whatever else we flip on the screen. Let's come rock with us. It's a good time. Plenty of analysis, plenty of antics. And with that, We will catch y'all next week.
Did I do the job? Yeah.